Welcome, welcome, geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have my interview with the one and only Adrienne Barbeau. We'll talk about her work on Escape from New York, on The Fog, on Carnival, and of course, we'll ask her about being the voice of Catwoman in Batman the Animated Series. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, four Hogwarts houses, one ring rules them all. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
And if you're driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight listening to us on the Big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you tuning in. I appreciate you sticking with us. If you're overlapped from listening to Outdoors Dan in the hour before, or maybe you're just here waiting for Max from Max on Movies in the next hour, either way, I appreciate you tuning in here in the 9 o'clock hour Central Time. If you are streaming us out there in the world on the app or on the KTRS website, hello to you. No video tonight. Joey V is out. It's Easter Sunday, and this is a pre-recorded interview. I'm live right now, but the interview is pre-recorded that I did previous to Adrienne's appearance at Planet Comic Con, so I didn't see any point in him coming in to run video for a pre-recorded interview. Hopefully next week, Joey V will be back, and he'll be in studio with me because I always miss seeing him, and I know it's kind of fun to interact on the video. So next week, we'll have video again for those of you who do like to watch us on YouTube and Facebook. Do me a favor, though. In the meantime, go to YouTube, find Geek to Me Radio there, hit the subscribe button. We're closing in on that gap. I'm still trying to get to that 1,000 follower mark. So every person who subscribes, that helps us out with our search engine optimization. If you're listening to us in the podcast form after the fact, hopefully you've subscribed on your platform of choice. We appreciate that as well. That said, this is a great interview. I was so excited to chat with this legendary actor, and I'm just going to go ahead and roll right into it. Right now, we're talking with iconic actor, so many different genres. She's literally done it all from Broadway to comedy to sci-fi, voice acting, horror, drama, nothing she can't do, Adrienne Barbeau. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, James.
It's so exciting. You're going to be at Planet Comic Con just down the highway here from us in Kansas City, March 8th through the 10th. And people will get to meet you. People will get to get pictures with you, have stuff signed by you. I'm curious, with your vast career, what is the oddest thing that anyone has ever asked you to sign for them?
I signed a young woman's shoulder, the back on her back.
And I assume she went and got it tattooed then?
Then she went and got it tattooed, yeah.
That's becoming so
that's
common.
That's the strangest thing. That's the not the strangest, the most unusual thing, I guess you'd say.
That seems to be more and more of a common thing, which I'm fascinated by. I mean, that's a fan if they're having your name tattooed on them.
You know, there's one gentleman out there who's got the entire poster of Swamp Thing on his leg, and there's several out there who have Creepshow all over them. In this case, she was. I got the impression she was a teenager or a late teenager in the 70s when Maude was on the air, and she said that my character really sort of gave her a path of how to be in the world. As a gay woman, she was, you know, there weren't too many strong, independent young women on TV at the time we did Maude. And I was very touched and had never really realized the impact that that a television show can have.
And we see that so much because there, I mean, just people, so many places to start, but let's start with Maude because you just mentioned that one that you did, I think, over 166 episodes, if I'm not mistaken, from 1972 to 1978, working with the great B. Arthur, who you considered a mentor. Talk a little bit about your experience, because that was, nowadays, people want to do TV shows that I just want a five-episode Netflix deal, I don't want to work. Back then, it was 22 episodes if you were signed up for
right.
a series.
That's right, yes. We did six seasons of 22 or 23 episodes, yeah.
Did it ever feel like work?
Never. I don't feel like I've ever worked a day in my life. And I've done some really junky jobs, but I love it. I love it.
And there was one of those shows, it was one of the many spinoffs from All in the Family, but probably, I think, the most spinoff show of television history. But I'm very curious because you seem like lately you've done more movies and voice work, but I see the occasional TV episode. So I'm curious, from your standpoint, versus like when you would do a guest spot on Eight is Enough or Quincy or The Love Boat or Fantasy Island versus now doing TV like you're doing an episode of Cowboy Bebop or Harlan Corbin's Shelter, what in your mind has changed the most about doing episodic TV?
I don't know if I'm aware of a lot of change. I'm aware of changes in the way television shows, especially, are cast. There is a lot more emphasis on social media now.
Mm.
And if two actors, equally talented actors, are up for the same role, I suspect that the casting director and the producers look at their social media accounts to see. And it only makes sense. It's not necessarily representative of, talent, but it only makes sense because if you have someone who has 50,000 followers, then you're pretty much guaranteed to have at least 45,000 people watching your show if
sure.
that person is in it. I first became aware of that back in the mid-2000s, I guess. But other than that, I don't know that I'm not aware of that much difference. Certainly there's a difference in the words on the page, because mm-hmm. especially when we're dealing with streaming shows and not network shows, they're much more loose when it comes to dialogue and visuals and things like that.
Sure.
You know, in the 70s, we had to fight to say the word bitch. I mean, and, you know, God forbid anybody should, you know, even be kissing.
Right.
I actually played probably the first gay woman in a television movie back in 1978. Today we're dealing with all kinds of things. But I don't watch a lot of network television, I'm sorry to say. I watch a lot of international television series.
Okay.
So I'm not so up to date on what... No, that's not necessarily true. When I'm not acting, I am video captioning for the visually impaired, which means I am narrating the visuals on screen in between the character's dialogue. For, you know, SWAT or SEAL Team or CSI or EVIL or any, you know, many, many television shows, Nova, Emeril, you know, when we're at cooking shows, and then films. And so I do see some network television that way. I'm looking at my script, but I know what's going on in the background.
That's so fascinating. How did that job come about?
You know, I started doing that in the about 2014, I think, or maybe 2013. A friend of mine is one of the producers. I mean, he runs the business that provides this kind of support for the networks. And I finally said, listen, can I audition for this? Because I read really well. I mean, I used to read a lot of books on tape. You know, I used to record a lot of books on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the animation and things like that. And I have, it's a certain talent that allows you to, you know, your eye to connect with your brain, to connect with your mouth, because I've never seen the words before, and you've got to do it in maybe 6 seconds or 3 seconds or maybe 5.5 seconds if there's a lot of action going on and not a lot of dialogue. So I went in and auditioned for him, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow, that's interesting. That's a job you know exists, but you always wonder, oh, I wonder who does that. And now we know Adrian Barbeau does a lot of that.
Yeah.
And talk about the voice work, too. You've done so many video games. I mean, from Marvel Ultimate Alliance, you voiced God of War 3, Halo 4, Hitman Absolution, Fallout 76. Do you find the voice roles for these video games, do you enjoy that process? Because your Batman co-star Kevin Conroy had mixed feelings about it. How do you find voice acting for video games?
Oh, I love it. I love it for some strange reasons, although I think there are other actors who will tell you the same thing. I love not having to put on makeup or worried about a costume, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just fun. It's a totally different approach to acting, because oftentimes you're working alone. You don't know really what you're doing. I mean, you've just got words on a page, and there's, you know, hopefully a great director in the booth saying to you, okay, the player turns to you and he picks up his gun and give me that line, and give me that line with a little more menace, or give me that line with a little more this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't watch them. I'm not a gamer. My kids are, but they're not. Although I have heard that my ex-husband John Carpenter is a big fan of Fallout 76. And he was very complimentary when we talked. And I told him, "Hey, I'm the overseer." You know.
Do your kids who are gamers get a kick out of it? It's like, hey, you know, that's my voice. That's paying for your college tuition, kid, or anything like that at all.
Yeah.
Do they get a kick out of having mom in a video game?
You know, they play Call of Duty and FIFA, and I don't know that they've ever played any of the ones that I did. I just did Starbright, I think, was one that was just released. And as we're talking, I'm trying to find my IMDb page, because I did one not long ago that I didn't know if we were able to talk about, but somebody said they just saw it on IMDb. So I did one.
Yeah, Starfield looks like, from what I'm seeing, unless there's another one that I'm missing here.
Right. But I did one about Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, Spider-Man 2. That's on there. I didn't know if you've done another one since, because the Spider-Man games are...
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so now I can talk about that. I did Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, those games are so... I mean, I try to game when I can. It's hard to find time sometimes, but those Spider-Man games are incredible.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know that. When we're hired to do a video game, we're not told the actual name of the video game. They want to keep it quiet. So the contract comes in with a pseudonym. So, and then, you know, I just show up and I do it, and I don't ever follow up on, oh, is this that one? And did this just come out? Or anything like that.
And I guess there's not, I mean, knowing, not knowing or not needing to know, I guess there's not a lot of research you need to do for the role either. You're kind of relying on the director and the script for that, for those types of things.
Yeah. There's no research unless, I guess, if you play the game.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
But no, there's no research. I've done a couple, Halo 4 and, God of War, God of War 3, I think, was the first time I did motion capture.
Okay.
But that was just my face. Halo 4 was full body motion capture. And that was a different approach because there you've got to memorize, you know, you've got to memorize the lines and you're actually, and you're really acting because they're using your body and your movements to capture.
Yeah. And not makeup per se, but you've got those little dots all over your face. So it's kind of like having makeup on.
Right. and you're wearing a body with
sure.
white balls of light or whatever they're doing.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's so amazing how video games have just changed from when I started out as a gamer as a kid. And now with all the, they look like cinematic movies. It's breathtaking, some of these. But if you ever do get a chance to go back and watch them, like I said, the Spider-Man ones are amazing. No pun intended.
Okay. Great.
And talking about the comic book realm, obviously Batman the Animated Series, huge. And to be able to play Selina Kyle Catwoman, was that a... you know, we always, when Batman comes out, we think of Julie Newmar, we think of Michelle Pfeiffer. You get this role as Catwoman. Were you offered that role? Did you audition for the role? Do you remember? And we will find out the answer to that question, how she got Catwoman, right after this. Stand by. We've got Adrian Barbeau with us for the rest of the night. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Geek to Me Radio, heard here on the Big 550 every Sunday night. I'm your host, James Enstall. I want to make sure we tell you before we go back to our conversation with Adrian Barbeau about our official comic book sponsor. Since we're talking Batman, I figured we'd talk about Larry at Bugs Comics and Games. If you are in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, you are in luck, my friends, because you can hop in your car and head right over there to his place on Bryan Road, easily accessible from either Highway 70 or from 364. Go by there and just walk in the door. I love you. You see the boxes and boxes and boxes of back issues. You've got the new comics just to your right as you walk in the store. You've got almost a triple shelf of just nothing but new comics that have come out in the past couple of weeks. New comic book day is every Wednesday, so Wednesday is a good day to go check them out. If you're wanting to do something this coming Wednesday, maybe you're wanting to dip your toe into the comic collecting world, see what's out there, go by and talk to Larry at Bugs Comics and Games. Bryan Road in Ofala, Missouri. If you're there, you might as well join the Avengers Club, because that way you start saving money on your new issues, your back issues, your toys, your games, and all that, just by picking out your favorite comic book or animation character. He'll give you an Avengers ID card, and you're off and running and saving money. Money while you collect. Gorgeous books in his display case along the wall. He had that in his old store that I used to go visit. He's got those right along the wall there. You can look at all the books he's got up there. Stuff from $1 comics all the way up to quite a bit pricier. If you're wanting that first appearance of Punisher, it's not going to cost you a dollar, but he's got it. It's cool to see some of the books he's got in there. And give him a follow on Instagram, instagram.com/bugscomicsandgames. If you're listening to this right now and you're outside the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, you don't have the luxury of going to Bugs store, you can look on his Instagram page and say, hey, you know what? I want that Faust omnibus. Or, hey, you know what? I want that Crow comic. Send him a message. Just say claim in the comments. He'll get back to you and he'll send you an invoice. You pay the invoice, and he ships the comic straight to your door. No fuss, no muss. Check him out on Facebook as well, Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook. We'll probably get Larry in here next month because we're going to be talking with a comic creator. It'll hopefully be a great show for the rest of you to hear because I'm very excited. I don't want to give it away yet. Just to make sure we get locked in before I say that we're going to have this guy on. But Larry's a wealth of information, so if you're wanting to sell your collection, if you're wanting to start collecting, talk to Larry, Bugs Comics and Games. Very proud to have them as the official comic book sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio. We were chatting with Adrian Barbeau before we went to commercial break, and I had to ask her because, you know, I'm a Batman fan. We just heard Kevin Conroy's voice bringing us back. So I had to ask her about getting the role of Catwoman in Batman the Animated Series.
For the role, in those days, I got a call from my agent, and she said, okay, we've got an audition for Catwoman. And I just went into the studio in the agency's office, and it was probably 30 seconds of dialogue that they asked me to do, and I did it. I had probably seen Well, I'd never seen Eartha Kitt do it. I knew Eartha Kitt's voice from listening to Armenian records when I was growing up. But I had probably seen her do it once or twice, but I never watched the TV show, and I had never seen any of the films. And so I sort of just went in cold and did it the way I thought, you know, Catwoman should sound. And they called me up about 3 weeks later and said, well, they want you to do the series. And it was great.
And we've had Kevin Conroy on the show several times, who we tragically lost about a year and a half ago. Andrea yes. Romano has been on the show so many times, and she's always just gushed whenever we talk about Batman the Animated Series, because for my money, there's not a better voice director in the business than Andrea Romano.
She was the best. And Andrea was, when I first got a call from an agent, this was been back in 1984, because my older son had just been born, and I got a call from an agent who had seen me on $20,000 Pyramid, and she said to me, you know, I think you've got a great voice. You should be doing voiceovers. You should be doing commercials and animation and everything. And I didn't know anything about it, but she sent me to, or she suggested, a class in animation that Andrea and Susan Blue were teaching. So my very first experience in animation was learning from Andrea. And then years later, I show up, you know, to do Catwoman, and there she is in the booth, and she was the best, the absolute best.
Do you remember, was the voice that we got of Catwoman in that series much different from your audition? I know Diane Pershing tells a wonderful story about how she found the voice for Poison Ivy. Do you remember, was the voice you ended up using much different than what you auditioned with?
I suspect it was not. I don't remember. I just remember. I mean, I don't think it was more than 30 seconds of dialogue, you know, of maybe three or four lines. But I suspect it was not, because they hired me for that voice, and so that's what I brought in. Or that's how I heard her, I guess.
And talking about your voice, obviously, the 1972 Grease. I mean, you were nominated for a Tony Award. You won a Theater Guild Award for Betty Rizzo. That was actually my first play that I ever did, was Grease. It's such a fun musical, but to have that originate that role, and we had Barry Bostwick on the show before, and he talked about how much of just amazing fun it was. And when you start in theater, because you did Fiddler on the Roof as well, every actor we've always talked to, no matter what they've done, no matter what the genre, how big they are in TV movies, always that's their first love is the theater. Do you still have that love of being on stage in front of a live audience?
You know, it comes down to the role. I mean, the last time I did a musical was 2016. I played Pippin's grandmother in Pippin, which was a fantastic role because I was 15 feet in the air on a trapeze, upside down, singing the song in the second act. And, you know, you don't get an opportunity to do something
sure.
like that very often. I don't have to get on stage. I'm not, you know, it really depends on the role. I sort of would rather get up early and go sit in a trailer at 5 a.m. to get my makeup on than have to get on stage at 8:00 p.m.
Right.
My energy is going down. But again, if the right role comes along, that makes all the difference in the world, in the choice.
Yeah. And so many roles I talked when I introduced you about. I mean, you've done just about every genre of acting possible. You've done comedy, sci-fi, you've done voice work. You're well known for horror, but you've done drama, a little bit of everything. Do you feel like, because a lot of people, I don't want to say unfairly, but they think of you as a horror actress because you've done some fantastic, just essential horror films like The Fog. Do you have a kind of sense that, like, well, That's not what I should be known for specifically, or do you kind of have that as a badge of honor?
I certainly don't mind being known for those films. You know,
yeah.
I'm very proud of the films themselves, and it's been wonderful to, you know, have them carry through how many years, you know, almost 40 years.
Yeah.
And to be still as revered as they are. I was pigeonholed right from the beginning in various holes. I mean, first I was a musical comedy actress. Then I was a TV sitcom actress. Then I was a TV actress. And I've told this story many times, but in the late 70s when Maude went off the air, if you were doing television, you couldn't get seen to do film. You know, they didn't think anybody would pay to go to the theater to see you if they could see you for free on Tuesday nights.
Huh.
And it was because my first feature was a horror film. It was The Fog. And because I was attached, I mean, by the time we did The Fog, John and I had just gotten married. So I was identified with an up-and-coming, very successful, brilliant horror film director that led to the next horror film and the next horror film. And, you know, along the way, I was doing comedies. I was doing more TV, Cannonball Run or Back to School and a bunch of other stuff that, you know, hopefully nobody ever sees. But I think it was because, you know, my first features were horror, that then I became established with that genre. And now, you know, I get all kinds of things offered, but primarily I get a lot of horror offered, and that's fine with me if it's the right role, if it's a good script.
I'm curious, one of the ones on your list, which sadly I haven't seen, but believe me, now that I'm aware of the movie, I will be finding it to view, was Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death.
Yes.
On its surface, it sounds like, well, that sounds ridiculous. But you've said a couple of times now you're selective about what roles you take. So I'm curious, with a role like that, when you see the title come across, what drew you to that project? What made you decide, you know what, I'm going to do this particular role?
Well, it was two things. We were in the middle of a writer's strike.
Ah.
And so nobody was doing anything. And this company made an agreement with the Writers Guild that they would abide by whatever the final outcome of the strike was. So suddenly, I got offered a film. It's a very witty film, and the director, who was directing under a false name, was very talented. And I just, it's basically Heart of Darkness or Apocalypse Now. And it was a treatise on women in the 80s.
Hmm.
So I took it, you know. I've taken roles just because I had termites and I needed to, you know, tent my house. And I've taken roles because they were filming someplace I really wanted to go. One of my first movies, it was right after The Fog, I guess, was sort of a science fiction film with Keira Dulay, who I was a huge fan of, having seen David and Lisa when I was, you know, probably in college. But it was filming in Greece, on Mykonos.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, who could turn that down?
Right. Yeah, my goodness. Some of the other movies on your list, and not that I want to sit here and go through your IMDb, but I'm such a fan of some of these movies like Cannonball Run, that cast. You've got Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Roger Moore. I think that was Jackie Chan's first movie role. You're working with Dom DeLuise. Was that a great deal of fun? Because sometimes you look at a movie and you're like, oh, this is hilarious. Must have been a lot of fun. And then you find out afterwards, no, this was a nightmare to work on. Did you have good memories of working on that with that crew and that cast?
You know, I wrote about this in my memoir. I have a memoir called There Are Worse Things I Could Do after the song that I sang in Greece.
Sure.
And I don't want to burst anyone's bubble. It was not a great experience for me.
Mm.
In the first place, we had a couple of really tragic accidents on the set, but that wasn't the point. It was, if you look at the outtakes right at the end, and you look at my reactions to what's going on, you'll see that maybe I wasn't having as much fun as everybody else. You know, I'm not going to make excuses to say it was early in my career. I was interested in acting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wanted to act. And most everybody else was just like, oh, we can do whatever we want, and the audience is going to love us anyway. And, you know, I mean, it was great fun working with, Dom DeLuise is a prince of a prince. And it was great fun working with Dean Martin.
Yeah.
And I was awestruck to be working with Roger Moore, you know, but, I was a little straighter, I think, in terms of my approach to the project. And so wasn't my favorite.
Gotcha. And you mentioned Roger Moore, obviously. You've worked with a couple different Bond-adjacent actors. Obviously, the great Louis Jordan from Swamp Thing. There was also, you worked with Donald Pleasance, who played Blofeld. You worked with him in Escape from New York. I'm curious, with all your work, were you ever offered a role in a James Bond movie?
No, never. I'm probably too short.
Is it something you would have taken? Because a lot of people have different feelings, especially during that era of the Bond girls. Is it a role you may have taken, or would it have depend on how the role was written? Or was it just like, no, I'm not doing.
Will she have done a Bond film? Was it something she was offered? We're going to find out. We're going to continue the conversation with Adrienne Barbeau right after this. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Hey, this is Adessa, and even though we don't talk about Bruno, we do talk about Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to Geek to Me Radio. Hopefully you're enjoying the conversation so far with Adrienne Barbeau. I'm enjoying it. I love talking to this lady. She's such an incredible actor, and this has been great being able to chat with her. Before we get back to the conversation, though, I want to make sure we tell you about our premier sponsor, because without these fine people, there would be no Geek to Me Radio. I'm talking about, of course, the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. Longtime listeners will know the website, discoverstcharles.com. DiscoverSTCharles.com. They've been with me since the beginning when I first launched this show, which I cannot believe I launched this show back in 2016. That seems forever ago. And I went to find sponsors to cover the cost of buying the airtime. And the first people I approached were the City of St. Charles. It was at the time, it was obviously Elizabeth, and then Dan was there. And they were like, well, yes, what can we do? How can we make this happen? So they immediately jumped on board. I've had a great relationship with them, and they do so much and so many cool things, like their recent Valentine's Festival, Once Upon a Valentine, or perhaps you're a fan of Christmas traditions. It's going to be celebrating 50 years this coming winter. Hard to believe they're going to do a bunch of cool things for it. So if you've enjoyed Christmas traditions in the past, wait till you see what Ryan Cooper and the group over there puts on for their big 50th anniversary of Christmas traditions. Obviously, you've got Legends and Lanterns to look forward to, but there's always something going on. They do a great job of keeping up their social media page on Instagram, so if you're not following them already, Discover St. Charles on Instagram. They always do a great job of highlighting the local shops and businesses that are down there, so follow them on Instagram, first of all, and then just go check out the website. Maybe you've not done that before. Maybe you've heard me say it and then be like, yeah, I'll look at it another time. After this interview's over, or while you're listening, pull up your iPad and just pull up the website, discoverstcharles.com. That way, as soon as my interview with Adrienne Barbeau is over, you go and check out the website. See all the cool things there are to see and do while you're there. If you're a local person, haven't visited for a while, go check it out. If you're not from the area, maybe you'll want to go check it out. Plan your trip either way at the website, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. We are finishing up my conversation with Adrienne Barbeau, talking about all the movies she's done, whether or not she's turned down roles, what role she's taken. And I had to ask, I mean, was she in that appropriate time setting when it was almost the glory days of Bond in the, you know, mid 70s with The Spy Who Loved Me and The Man with the Golden Gun and obviously Moonraker. So I'd asked, have you ever considered, was being a Bond girl something you would have passed on, or would you have taken that opportunity?
Oh, no, I would have loved to have done a James Bond movie. Are you kidding me? Travel the world?
Right.
And work with Roger Moore or Sean Connery or any of the others. I mean, but no, it never, I'm sure I was too, among other things, I was too short.
In a broader scope, were there ever any roles, and maybe you can't, you know, there might be a contractual thing you can't mention, but were there any ever roles that you were offered that you ended up, you had to pass on, and you look back and like, oh, I should have, I wish I would have done that, or circumstances kept you from taking a role that you would have liked to have done otherwise?
The only one I can think of, and it's not that I look back and said, oh, I wish I would have done that, but it was, I found it funny when I saw what happened. I got sent a script. My agent sent me a script with an offer. I don't know if they said he was a fairly new director, but he was also a very well-established musician, a director or writer or whatever. And I read the first 20 pages, and I called my agency back, and I said, there is no way in hell I would ever do this. I mean, this is just, I would never allow my children to see this. There's no way I'm doing this movie. Cut to about a year later, and I was at a convention, and Bill Moseley was there. Bill and I had done Carnival together, the HBO series. And Bill was signing autographs, and he had a line that was down the block and out the street. And I said, Bill, this is fantastic. You know, what movie? What are they all coming to get? What movie? He said, The Devil's Rejects. And that was the one I had turned down. It was Rob Zombie's The Devil's Rejects. Not my kind of film. I ended up working for Rob in Halloween, in Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah.
Had one scene with Malcolm McDowell, which ended up on the cutting room floor because he didn't have time. But, you know, I was really happy to work with Rob, but not in The Devil's Rejects. That's just,
a bridge
that's
too
a little
far.
Too horror for me.
Right. You worked on General Hospital, too, for 66 episodes. And it's interesting because a lot of actors, you know, I think of Tommy Lee Jones, got their start in soap operas. This is something you came back and visited after you were a well-established actor. So I'm curious, was it, again, the offer that was made to you for the character that drew you in? Or what was it that brought you on to General Hospital?
When they made the offer, they said it was just going to be a month of filming. And the character seemed interesting. And so I said, sure, you know, and then at the end of the month, the producer came to me and said, okay, well, we've got this idea for you and for the character. And I went from being, sort of a straight, mentor to the sort of one of the stars of the show. I think I ran a charity organization or something. I mean, it was a fairly straight role. To suddenly, they were going to write this whole storyline where I was a kidnapper and a murderer and all of these things. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. How do I, never having done sitcom, I mean, daytime television before, soap operas, how do I justify what I just did in the last month with the way this is going, you know?
Yeah.
But I went along with it, and it's not a medium that I enjoy.
Okay.
In the first place, because by the time I did it, that was 2012, I think, the budgets had been cut back so much that we never even rehearsed.
Oh, wow.
We ran the scene once for cameras, and then we just did it. And the one actress I was working with just, you know, ad-libbed everything. And it wasn't the way I was used to working, and it wasn't fun. It wasn't comfortable. But, you know, I did it.
Yeah. Another thing on the list, too. Like I said, there's so many genres you've worked in. I was curious about revisiting franchises. You came back for the 2019 Swamp Thing, obviously a different role, and also the TV show Creepshow. You did a couple episodes of that. Is it kind of I know it's obviously not the same actors, not the same directors, but do you, was that a nostalgic thing to come back and revisit those, I guess, universes?
No, because they were quite different. Well, I mean, the wonderful thing about doing Creepshow is that Greg Nicotero had been, when we did the original Creepshow, I don't even know if Greg had started his career in makeup, but he was around. And so, and then, of course, he became, you know, so successful with
Walking Dead and everything, sure.
Walking Dead and all of that. So I was very complimented that they would have me back. And I had worked with Tobin. I had worked with Tobin Bell.
Oh, yeah.
Twice before, I think, already. We had done a Criminal Minds, and we had done a movie. And so that was great fun to show up and get to work with Tobin. And, of course, the segment that we did was based on a Stephen King short story.
Mm.
But it wasn't the same because Billy from the original Creepshow is, I mean, you don't forget her.
Right.
You know? She's really a character. In terms of Swamp Thing, it was such a totally different approach.
Yeah.
To what we had done originally. I was very happy to be there, and they built the most beautiful set. I mean, that swamp, I wished that Wes Craven had been alive to see that swamp. It was incredibly impressive. And unfortunately, the series ended. I think it sort of got caught in a political situation between streaming networks or something, and it didn't go on, but it was very successful. People loved it.
Yeah. Oh, and it was great. It was so, I was heartbroken when they did it only one season and then canceled it. It was devastating. It was so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another TV show you worked on, and the reason I mentioned this one is because one of the gentlemen, John Rhys-Davies, will be at Planet Comic Con with you. You did Sliders, which is a cult classic. It's a fan favorite. Everyone loves this. And I can't imagine working with someone like John wouldn't be rewarding. But then I look back and you've worked with so many fantastic people throughout your career, like just the names, some of the names we mentioned today. Is there anyone who, obviously, I don't want to, Maude would be up in the top of the list with Bea Arthur. Is there any actor who you may have just done one episode of something with them, but you just clicked, became fast friends, you still contact and are in touch with to this day?
Tim DeKay from Carnival.
Okay.
We became very close friends. And Tim went on to do White Collar, and he's in Oppenheimer. And,
yeah.
I mean, you know, Tim played, if you're familiar with Carnival, he was a Jonesy, the one with the bum leg.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
And I loved Tim. I loved him. he credits me with getting his kids into this high school or the grammar school and high school that my boys had gone to. I recommended it highly, and he's always been very thankful to me because they loved it too. But Tim is one. Tim is the first one who comes to mind because we've stayed very close, and mm-hmm. we get together and have coffee whenever we can.
Oh.
And I've been very fortunate. I think in my entire career, there may be four or five people that I would probably rather not work with again.
I want to ask you to go back to one of your very first roles. At least it's the first one you're credited with, and IMDb gets it wrong, so I always like to ask. Your very first role was in The Great Houdini with Paul Michael Glaser, Sally Struthers, Bill Bixby, Peter Cushing, Clive Revel, who voiced Alfred in Batman. Do you remember your audition or getting that role, or was that a big deal?
It wasn't my first role.
Okay.
It was my first TV film.
Okay.
And I just got a call from my agent saying, they want you for this TV movie. I think it was my first TV movie. I may have done, there was one called Having Babies, which may have preceded.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe they were flip-flopped on IMDb for whatever reason.
I don't know. I'm not the one to ask.
Right.
But I got a call from my agent. I think I was down in Palm Springs doing Owl and the Pussycat with Conrad Bain.
Oh.
On stage.
Sure.
Down there. And my agent called and said, yeah, they want you to play this part with Sally Struthers and the woman that played Ethel Mertz on Vivian Vance.
Yes.
And so I said, yeah.
And it's when you go through all these genres, like I mentioned, you've not been pigeonholed, in my opinion. You've done so many. Do you have one that you prefer? Do you like comedy? Do you gravitate more towards drama-type scripts or horror-type scripts?
I think I gravitate more toward dramatic scripts.
Hmm.
Not necessarily... Well, what I watch, I primarily watch Scandinavian mysteries.
Okay.
And French mysteries and things like that. Half-hour sitcom doesn't... I don't find them funny most of the time.
Mm, okay.
Again, it really depends on the role. I just did a lovely... just a 5-minute scene in a 9-1-1 that was, I just thought it was just such a, it was a great role. It was a lovely role. I had a great time doing AJ and the Queen with Rue Paul for Netflix. Again, because I liked the character and I loved Rue Paul. And it really comes down to the role.
Yeah.
I'm going to start, I start work on Monday on a film that's sort of a gangster, a casino mob gangster movie.
Fun. That sounds cool.
I'm not sure how they'd describe it, but it's a drama. One of the films that I loved more than anything, one of the jobs that I loved more than anything in the world was HBO's Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
I love the character. I love the metaphysical aspects of the script. I love the cast. I love the crew. I love the writers, the caterers, the location, everything about it. But the character was really unique.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I was a snake dancer in a traveling carnival in the 1930s.
Mm.
Died and was brought back and had second sight. It was a lot.
Yeah.
And had a romance with the 26-year-old lead in the show, who was a young man who had the ability to heal. It's right up my alley.
Just a great part, well written, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It was.
And as I know we're wrapping this up, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Again, for those of you listening, Planet Comic Con, March 8th through the 10th, you can see her there. You can get her to sign stuff, take pictures and all that kind of stuff. It'll be fun because the Batman reunion of sorts will be there because you've got Ron Perlman, who voiced Clayface. You're going to have Diane Pershing, who voiced Poison Ivy. Some of the directors like Dan Reba will be there. And it's kind of exciting when to see these people. I know a lot of times you weren't necessarily in the booth with all these people, but when you're there and you see, Diane, we were in this, or Ron, do you have a little reunion of sorts?
Oh yes, Diane especially. Diane has stayed with me when she's come to LA. I didn't realize she was going to be there. The only one I knew that was going to be there that I have a relationship with is Barry Bostwick.
Yeah,
Barry's going to be there, so I'm looking forward to it. But it's always fun to run in. That's one of the reasons I do them. You'll find me at any convention I can attend where Tom Atkins is, because Tom is one of my closest friends.
Sure.
And he lives in Pittsburgh, and I live in L.A. And so the only time we get to see each other is if we show up at the same convention. And that's one of the great perks of doing these things.
And right before I let you go, it's a game we play with several of our guests we've done before. We call it Celebrity This or That. There's no wrong answer. You just pick between these two things, because whatever answer you choose is the right answer. If you're going on vacation, mountains or beach?
Boy, that's a hard one. That's a really hard one for me. Depends on the time of year.
Okay.
How's that?
That's fair enough. Do you prefer dark chocolate or milk chocolate?
Dark chocolate, no question.
And if you're driving, do you prefer a sedan or a coupe?
By a coupe, you mean a two-door?
Yes.
No, I'm too practical. I got dogs. I had kids. You know.
So bigger car is the way to go.
It's a hybrid. It's a hybrid with a big trunk. That's what I prefer.
And this one might be a little unfair, because I know you've played in one of these universes. Do you prefer Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, my gosh. I haven't seen Star Wars since the early days. And I might have to say Star Trek, because I found it sort of witty, and because I enjoyed doing it, yes.
And my final one I'll ask you, the Beatles or the Stones?
Oh, my God, the Stones.
All right. That was definitive. Wow. No hesitation
there.
Yeah,
I was never a Beatles fan.
Okay.
I really wasn't.
It has been such a delight to chat with you. If people want to keep up with you, are you active on social media? Are there websites that they should go to?
Yes, I'm active. I'm active on Instagram. I don't look at my Facebook page, although I do have one. But I'm active on Instagram, and it's... hold on, because I always mix it up with with everything else. And I do have a web page that I try to keep current. My web page is abarbeau.com. And hold on, I'm looking for my notes to myself that have all the other Adrienne_Barbeau.
Adrienne underscore Barbeau. And for those of you listening, just scroll down to the bottom of the page if you're hearing us in the podcast form, and we'll have a link to her socials there. It's been fantastic to chat with you. This has been a bucket list interview for me. I've been a fan for the longest time, and I've wanted you on the show forever. I'm so excited that I'm going to get to meet you in just a couple weeks at Planet Comic Con. Adrienne Barbeau, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, James.
There she goes. What a great person and such a career. My goodness. I know I've spoken with so many people about, you know, having her on. Everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you've got Adrienne Barbeau. So it was exciting for me to talk to her. And I got a lot of great questions from a lot of you. I tried to incorporate some of those questions. Like, I know my friend Chris Strawn asked about her working on Grease. So I made sure I asked the musical theater question. And there were some other questions about her work with The Fog. I tried to get that horror element in there, but we could have talked forever. And hopefully you got to go see her at Planet Comic Con in Kansas City, along with all the other fantastic people they had there. If you are liking what we put out here at Geek to Me Radio, make sure you subscribe. Go to the YouTube page, youtube.com/geektomeradio, and hit that subscribe button, and then hit the little bell so that way you get notified whenever we do have video, when we go live with video. Joey V's in the studio with me, and we'll have that going so you can see some of the guests who are on our live show. And we've got some great guests coming up. I don't know where I put my calendar right now, but I know in April we've got some great creators, and I'm talking right now with some people. We're already booking May dates for the show. So make sure you go to YouTube, find me there, hit the subscribe button, and then hit the little bell notification. You'll get notified every time we go live with video so you don't miss our live shows. And, of course, another thing you're not going to want to miss, in a little over a year from now, we're bringing a Comic-Con here to the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, Two Rivers Comic-Con. If you want to find us on Twitter and Instagram, it's the number 2 Rivers Comic-Con spelt out. Go ahead and follow us there on Instagram and on Twitter. We'll announce guests as we go. I just had a meeting with my business partner who is excited as I am about this event. And we're going to be bringing you some really fantastic people, both from the realm of comic books, writers and artists and creators, and also some really cool voice actors as well that we think you're going to be excited about. And we've already talked about
what year two and year three might look like. So in order to get that year two and year three, well, to make sure you come check us out and buy tickets and have a great time at Two Rivers Comic Con. It'll be right there along North Main Street in St. Charles. The Foundry is one of the buildings we'll be working out of. Now, if you're familiar with that, right there on Riverside Drive. And we are also looking at a couple other buildings along North Main. We don't know how far up Main we're going to go, but right now that's kind of where we're looking at, kind of like a three-block radius, which is no longer than going to, you know, downtown when they had Wizard World and Fan Expo come through and you're walking through the big convention center. It's just about the same amount of space. It's just kind of spread out. And there's great food along Main Street. As you know, I just got done talking about the city of St. Charles and all the cool things there are to do down there. So it's very exciting. We've got a lot of cool things happening. You'll be hearing more of those announcements as I get them. As we come along and have new stuff to share, we'll share it right here on Geek to Me Radio. Make sure you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Geek to Me Radio, on those platforms. And of course, Facebook.com/Geek to Me Radio. If you give us a follow there, we would greatly appreciate that as well. That's going to do it. Another show in the books. Thank you to Joey V for making the show sound as good as it does. Without him, I still wouldn't be on the air. He's going to be the one putting this up online, letting all you hear it after the fact in the podcast form. Thank you to Adrienne Barbeau for her time and her talent. Thank you to the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau, and of course, Bugs Comics and Games for keeping this show on the air. Until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch the flash. It's not in the way.
Good night.